All right, we are going to have a great episode today. We are featuring Haymakers for Hope. Haymakers for Hope gives just regular men and women the chance to fight back against cancer by training for and competing in charity boxing events to raise money and awareness. And we've got the two founders with us, Andrew Meyerson and Julie Kelly. And we've got two people who've also, one in one case, has already stepped in the ring, and another will be stepping into the ring as part of the Haymakers for Hope experience. Nicolette Dubow, who has previously fought, and Greg Wetzel, who will be fighting this November 15th. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I'll start, just before anything, with a personal note. So this podcast is about crazy good turns, people who do wonderful things for others. And in addition to the good turn part of this, you nailed the crazy part. Because I will tell you, I am old enough so that when I went to school, when I was a kid, we actually had to take boxing as a required sport. And what I learned from that was, first off, boxing requires a lot of skill. But the second thing I learned from that is when you're outmatched in the ring, it's the longest damn 3 minutes in life. So I give you great credit for boxing and turning it into a charitable effort. And I'd love to start, Andrew and Julie, with kind of your founding story. How did this thought come to you? How'd you get together on this? What's the background?
I was working at Goldman Sachs in New York City, and Julie was working at Hearst in New York City. Julie, we both found this boxing gym called Trinity Boxing Club. It was, at the time, I mean, I think it was a very special place. There was a lot of just amazing people there, and we both started. Julie ended up winning the New York City Golden Gloves in 2009, and then said, you know, she was going to do it again and asked me if I wanted to train with her. The story goes that, you know, I said, sure, why not? And we started training, and then, you know, we were kind of talking about everything that we were doing, and we said, when you think about people that run marathons, it doesn't necessarily matter what the outcome is. People are usually, when they're donating to help people to, you know, to help through the training, help people through the training process. You know, they're urging them through that, like, it's long, it's arduous, and they're helping them through that long period. And we realized that boxing was very similar in the sense that the training timeline that we were doing for boxing was the same as what we were doing for marathons. And so we said, why don't we see if we can set up a fundraising page and have people donate to our boxing training. And then if they wanted to, they can come to the, you know, the actual fight. And this was all before GoFundMe or, you know, Crowdrise, or when it was easy to set up a fundraising page. So we had to go out, and we reached out to Dana-Farber and the Jimmy Fund, and they told us flat out no, like, they would not set up a fundraising page for us for boxing. And, you know, luckily I'm a really, really annoying human being. So they finally said yes. And then the joke that we always like to say is that we vastly underestimated how much our friends like to see us get punched in the face. And within, I think it was like within 20 minutes, you know, it was like really fast period of time, there was $5,000 raised. And it was just, and then it was just kind of, it just snowballed from there. You know, but then we realized very quickly that the more we fought, the less people seemed to be interested. And I kind of equate it to when you have a friend that's in a band, everyone goes to that first show, and then no one seems to go to the subsequent shows. And same with boxing. You know, if not that many people are into professional boxing, then why would you go to an amateur boxing show unless there was a novelty or, you know, a tie? And at the same time, we had a lot of our friends say, oh, I would love to see what I could do in the ring one time, but I just don't know how to get started. And one thing that Julie and I found from Trinity was that it wasn't the easiest place to get into. Like, it was, you know, it wasn't a fancy gym. It was very, you know, bare bones. But once you got in, and once you were really, like, you know, inundated with the community, it was a really special place.
A lot of boxing gyms are just inherently intimidating, and people feel a little awkward, especially if that's not a sport that they're into. But once you kind of walk in and break the barrier, you realize that the people you're meeting are really kind, and it's a great group of people. And once you start training, you just become a big family.
Yeah. And then so, and really, we really started Haymakers as a volunteer effort. So we just thought it would be something that we could do. We could just do it better than some of the like quote unquote charity events that we had fought in when we were younger, because some of the events just didn't necessarily, like they didn't give as much as they said they would, or they just weren't well run. And we just thought we could do a better job. And it would just be something that we would do once a year, once every other year, just something that we could just do on the side. And then, you know, the first event happened in Boston in 2011. Nicolette was actually there, not as a participant, but just as a spectator. And something about the show just compelled me to leave my job at Goldman Sachs and to say, you know, we should just grow this and really do something. We can do something special here.
So Andrew and Julie, what drove you to connect this to cancer and make it really a full-time effort?
When I was 22, I just graduated from college. I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and having just graduated college and watching, you know, all my friends kind of go on to get jobs and live what I would call an adult life, I started treatment, and it was a really weird time. You know, it was 2001 when I was diagnosed. I was diagnosed 2 days after 9/11. It was a strange time, and where I was being treated at Beth Israel, which was is an amazing hospital, but I was on the adult floor, and I obviously wasn't a pediatric patient, but I wasn't really what I would call like a full-blown adult either. And I went through 4 months of chemo and took a month off to get my body a little bit healthier to get through radiation. And it was a trying time for me. I felt very lost as I feel like a lot of people do once they graduate college. And I was a little bit more delayed because I was going through this experience, and both myself and my friends weren't necessarily emotionally equipped for this kind of experience. And, just Andrew and I talking in the gym and having had that background and realizing that I made it through, I was healthy. Once I was completely able-bodied, and I felt like I needed to give back, and I started working with Team in Training, which is the fundraising branch of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and started running marathons and triathlons for them. And I absolutely adored, loved the fundraising aspect and feeling like, yeah, I was paying it forward, but I despised endurance events. And I realized the only thing fueling me mile after mile was that I was doing this because I felt like I needed to. And when I started boxing, I completely just fell in love. And this was the sport, as a former athlete in my entire life and throughout high school, this was the sport I had really been looking for that kind of made me feel really whole. It gave me a purpose, especially post-treatment.
Andrew, what was the driving force on your side?
One of my best friends growing up passed away from cancer when we were in college. And so, you know, there wasn't really an immediate action to be had. But I think that once I met Julie and we just started talking about doing something that was, you know, if we were spending the time training, maybe we should do something a little bit more, maybe something philanthropic. And so, you know, cancer, I think, is something that has affected, you know, it affects 1 in 3 people in this country nowadays. It's a pretty universal thing. And so, we just, you know, we wanted to do something about that.
So there are lots of ways to raise money to fight cancer. You've named some of them. What do you think makes boxing such a powerful way to do it?
You know, you can run a race. You can't really just do a boxing match. It is something that is, you know, people put their whole selves into this. It's not a street fight. And we connect people to top-notch boxing gyms in the cities that we work in. And these people are getting trained. And so they're learning a new sport. It's a big mental thing, and it's also a physical component too. One of the unexpected things that Julie and I necessarily didn't think about when we started this was it's really become a transformative experience for a lot of the people that go through it. So I think we get a lot of former athletes. We have so many stories, right? We have people who this is their way to kind of reconnect with their former self. Or, you know, we had one person who got hit by a car and was told he wasn't going to be able to walk again. And this was a way for him to say that, you know, he's really back as a human being. We had a mother of 4 who just wanted her kids to know that she was more than just mom. You know, we can get into Nicolette's story, but we just have a lot of people out there who you wouldn't necessarily think would do this. You know, obviously we do have the people who are the Division One athlete, and this is just like, you know, another kind of notch in their belt as far as like a physical activity. But we also have a lot of people who you just really would not think would do something like this. And I think that's what's really powerful about it is people from all walks of life who are raising an incredible amount of money and their communities. And I don't know what it is about boxing or about, you know, the pugilistic aspect of it, but people's whole communities seem to rally around them if they're doing it. And so I think that the fundraising capabilities for that person who's doing it out of a novelty for the first time are heightened from something that you would just think like a walk or a marathon.
It's a perfect lead in to Nicolette and Greg. So maybe Nicolette first, why did you do this?
When I had first met Julie and Andrew, one of my friends was actually fighting in the Haymakers in 2011, and she was actually honoring my son, who was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 3. She had reached out to me letting me know that she was doing this and had asked my permission to let her honor my son, and I had said absolutely. So Andrew had reached out to me and had offered us being able to come and watch this amazing event happen. Seeing everybody get in there and give their all, 4 months of training to get in the ring and actually fight was incredible. At that moment, I didn't think I would be able to do it, but it definitely piqued my interest. And then watching my son battle for 18 months and give his all made me realize that I wanted to be able to do that. And if he could fight cancer, then I could get in the ring, raise money and awareness for not only pediatric cancer, but all the other cancers that were out there. So he passed away in 2011. And at that point, it became my mission to get accepted to Haymakers for Hope and get in there and fight for or more against cancer than anything else. It took me several applications before they found a match for me, but I finally got accepted in 2014 and it changed my life.
Wow. So that's such an amazing story on so many levels. What's it like to be in a boxing match?
It's like a very crazy car accident that you can't help but stare at, but you like, I don't want to be involved in that. However, you're involved in that is like the best way I can explain it. So I've played sports my whole life since I was little. Once I became a parent, I kind of stopped that and, you know, did the work and the parent thing. So it was definitely a lot of work to get back into my physical ability, even though they say muscle has memory. And that 3-minute round seriously feels like it's like 45 minutes on a soccer field.
I can attest to the truth of that. It's a long 3 minutes, isn't it?
It is the longest 3 minutes of your life.
You referenced the process of getting selected for a match. Andrew or Julie, would you sort of go through, how does that work? How do you make sure that this is a reasonable match between two people?
You know, we want to raise as much money as humanly possible. We also, people's safety is paramount to us. So we have a pretty rigorous application process where people let us know their age, their weight, their height, any previous athletic experience than any previous boxing experience. What we do is, if you think about it in like a Venn diagram, the first interdeviation is we kind of cut the people that just can't be matched. So, you know, whether they're like, they've aged out or they, you know, weight, they just don't necessarily match with anybody else that has signed up, you know, no matter what their fundraising potential is, because one of the limitations of our business model is there's only 30 people that can do this at a time, as opposed to a marathon where, you know, the only limitation is how many people can I fit on a road. So we need to make sure that people are safe and that they are going to be amazing culture carriers for us. And the only way to do that is to put them into what I would call a very safe environment and with a very real experience. So the boxing match is obviously a very real experience, but we try to make it as safe as we can. And so we try to match people as appropriately as we can. And so, you know, we are lucky in the cities that we've done events for the last few years, and especially in Boston and New York, where we have a following and we have hundreds of people who will sign up for those 30 spots. And then so it's on us. It's actually a 3-week process where we have to kind of go through all the applications and just see, you know, where we can make the matches work the best, you know, for the card.
To piggyback on what Andrew was saying, it's really important for us because of what people are doing is so special and the reasons that are driving them to step in the ring. It's really important to have fair and competitive bouts. So we make matches based essentially on paper, who we think looks good versus age, weight. We go step further outside of normal parameters of boxing and look at height. And then we go into the gyms and watch people train and just watch people, watch video, and halfway through and start to make tentative matches based on what we see. And then halfway through the training, we have a media day and a sparring day where the entire group of training fighters comes and everyone trains and everyone spars their opponent with their coach in the corner. And that's for fighters, trainers, and us as an organization to confirm that we think it's a fair and competitive bout.
So, Greg, turning to you, you've got a bout coming up soon. Did you get picked the first time through the process or you applied multiple times? Why are you doing this?
I was one of the fortunate ones, I suppose, in that I got lucky and got a match on my first application. I'd been eyeing the event for many years. I don't know how it originally showed up on my radar in terms of where Haymakers first entered my consciousness through an internet article or what have you, but I've been following it ever since. I think actually it was probably through one of the Boston Events articles originally, but over the years, timing just wasn't right. Of course, you need to dedicate virtually 100% of your time and focus to this event for 4 months. I certainly wanted to do that. So this year was the right year for me, and I submitted my application. And originally, actually, there was not a match, and I got the unfortunate email that maybe next year. And then about 10 days later, sure enough, for whatever reasons, we did find a match. So super happy day. I was actually on vacation with my wife when I read the email and absolutely just arguably made my vacation, frankly, but certainly made my evening that evening.
Was your wife's reaction to be excited for you or more to be worried for you?
I think to be excited. We've known each other for 30 years, married for 17. So she knows me as well as anybody and knows that this is something that obviously she knew that I had applied and knew that it was something that I would be interested in. I guess to answer the other part of your question, I've always been involved in athletics. The why for me, somewhat straightforward. Those personal athletic challenges have largely been about me and maybe to some extent about my family and they're rooting me on or what have you. But what intrigued me about Haymakers for Hope is the uniqueness of it. It's about the event and it's about the cause first and foremost, not about the individual and their accomplishment. Certainly there's something to be said for that. And that's what gets people to come to the event perhaps and watch people root for each other. But ultimately it's about blending that personal challenge on behalf of others. And that's what I really liked about it. I don't have a personal story wherein, I've certainly been affected by cancer in that I have friends and family who've been affected by the disease, who have battled it, who've succumbed to it in some instances. But it hasn't hit closer to home for me than that, as it has for others. That doesn't mean that needs to happen for you to become involved in an event like this. So it just was important for me to do something that blended that personal challenge, but to do it in a way that was first and foremost for others. And then by extension, and I think this is an important point that if not gets lost, but it's important to mention that it's not just the fighters, in New York, the 32 fighters, but it's also their trainers, the donors, the folks who attend the event. It's everybody pulling in the same direction on this one. And that's what I really, really love about the event. It's what one of the elements that definitely intrigued me going back 4 years ago when I was first reading about it, and even more so now. Just everybody on the same page, pulling in the same direction. For those three rounds, I'll, be battling against my opponent, as will, the other 15 bouts. But then outside the ring, we're all fighting for the same cause, and we're all pulling in the same direction.
Greg, there's no easy way to segue into this, but you're also another kind of hero having save someone in a subway. I read as I was doing research on you. Is that correct?
Yeah. There was a woman that had at our local subway stop. I live here in Manhattan, and I was with my three kids. We were going up to a school event on the weekend. I just kind of caught out of the corner of my eye her. She fell onto the tracks and walked up upon it, and then was able to kind of confirm that that's actually what happened. There was still a couple minutes until the train came into the station. In New York, they have the signs that say how long you have. So I was able to get down onto the tracks and kind of get her up to platform level, where some other very helpful folks were able to kind of pull her onto the platform, and then I could, you know, get out.
It speaks volumes about you, and I think it's also a great indicator of the kind of people who are interested in participating. To Andrew and Julie, what's the most rewarding part of running the organization?
You know, I say that there's an indirect benefit and direct benefit to what we do. And I think the direct benefit is obviously the money that's raised. And, you know, it just hitting $10 million this week was a huge milestone for us. So if Frank, for example, or Greg is fighting, so he has two primary ways to raise money. So he can raise money through online, through his, like, you know, solicited donations, just like you would a marathon. And then he can also sell tickets and tables to the event that we, you know, our team puts on. I would say that the people's motivation who donate online are donating because Greg has a story and he's telling them, you know, that he wants to raise the money for a certain, you know, reason, a certain cause, or staying with Nicolette. And then the people that are coming to the event and buying tickets are really doing so for the entertainment value. So 100% of the money that's raised online. So if Greg or Nicolette or any of the fighters were to say, we're raising money for XYZ Foundation, you know, we're really passionate about it, please support me in my training, 100% of those dollars goes right to where Greg or Nicolette or any of the fighters is directing it to. And then the money that's raised through the event, the waterfall of funds is, it goes towards paying for the event, paying for our team, any of our growth. And then if we do the job that we're supposed to do, then the events are high margin enough that we're able to have extra money left over that we are currently putting into a philanthropic investment fund, which will hopefully, we're in the process of working out our own programming. So it'll be kind of like Haymakers 2.0, where we can hopefully give the, not necessarily the fighting experience, but the training experience to people who have just gone through chemotherapy to help them to kind of get back into life.
So the fundraising is the first part of the rewarding experience. Are there other parts?
For me, it's very rewarding, obviously, as a cancer survivor, to fundraising. Our number one goal is to do our part to just cure cancer. And then secondary, I'm in constant contact with fighters on a regular basis, and I forge these relationships with the fighters over their 4-month journey. And who I see the day at orientation and then the person that I see on fight night step out of the ring are two completely different people. I have a lot of conversations over those 4 months with people coming to me like, can I do this? And just, there is that self-doubt. And that's a normal thing for a lot of boxers, as somebody like myself who competed, that can be in the back of your mind. And that's sort of a demon you have to overcome. And to be able to tag along on the 4-month journey of learning to box and not listening to those voices in your head that are telling you can't do it, all while fundraising, all while juggling your job, your life, your kids, or your friends, whatever it is, to keep that focus. And at the end of the 4 months, to just put your head and your heart on the line to do something bigger than you, that's what is the most rewarding to me. And to see the trickle-down effects, like on fight night, our ring card girls are all cancer survivors or those going through treatment. And in this past event that we had last week, our Bells of the Brawl, we had 3 pediatric patients, 2 of whom are still going through treatment, and another woman who is currently battling stage 4 appendix cancer. And to see her getting in the ring and just having so much fun with it, and the crowd being completely off the charts, electric, supporting her, that is really the most rewarding thing. That's when you know that getting up out of bed every day, you just stay focused, and that's the reason that you're doing what you're doing.
Wow. Nicolette, so having fought several years ago, do you stay involved, or are you still part of this process?
I am very active still in the Haymakers for Hope. I volunteer at both of their charity events every year. I reach out to fighters that are currently going through it. I kind of be their voice of reason and say, yes, you can do this, as much as you're like, why am I doing this? Am I crazy for trying to get in there? So I definitely stay as active as I possibly can. I try to get new recruits for them because it was honestly one of the best experiences of my life. I've done several fundraisers for cancer since my son has passed, and Haymakers is one of the best organizations that I've been involved with.
So not only that, I think Nicolette will downplay that a little bit because she basically runs backstage.
I always joke around that we're going to have to start paying her because she owns backstage and the equipment table at both of our events in Boston.
And she also downplays a little bit also because not only is she raising money, just not through Haymakers, but other ways, that she was actually named one of Mass General's 100. Which is a kind of fancy $500 seat event here in Boston that she got the distinction of.
So just out of my own personal curiosity, Nicolette, what's it like to get in the stage in front, in the ring in front of so many people? How does that feel?
I don't even know if there's words that can describe that feeling. My fight, I was the 10th fight of the night, so I was the last fight. So I had a lot of adrenaline running through me. I was anxious. I was nervous. I mean, every emotion you can feel is running through your body. And then watching fight after fight, anticipating your fight and trying to figure out how it's going to go, because you never know how it's going to go. There's nothing that can compare to getting in the fight other than it is life-changing. And I would do it again, and I've done it again. I've continued to fight after that for a few years after, and it was great. And it's people will be like, are you crazy for wanting to fight? And it's just the most incredible feeling. When you have a crowd in front of you and the big bright lights shining on you, and you almost feel like a movie star for one night, you know? It's pretty awesome.
And are the crowds supportive? What's the crowd experience like?
It's absolutely electric because I think that, you know, so there's 30 fighters, there's about 2,000 people. So on average, people are getting between, you know, 50 and 75 people to come to see them fight. It is their closest friends, their family, their coworkers, and they just get so into it. And it is, you know, I don't know if it's the content of the event, if it's the alcohol, if it's just the, you know, all like a perfect mix of all of them. I think it was our second year that people, we do the event in Boston at the House of Blues, and they told us that the people drank more than at the Kid Rock concert that year. So, but I think that, you know, it's a wild, you know, because people are, I would say 95% of the people that are coming to our event have never actually seen live boxing before. And so it's new to them too. So whether they're in the ring or they're not, this is a brand new experience. And from a production value, we just go way beyond what you would expect. And frankly, you know, if you're in New York on November 17th, you should definitely come to Greg's fight, because I think it'll blow your mind how, like, everyone gets their own intro video. The people come out, they have their own song, they have their own, you know, nickname. We actually just had the best nickname on our event last Wednesday that I think we've ever had, potentially, which was a 48-year-old librarian who called herself the Dewey Decimator.
That's great. I mean, part of it must just be this great celebration of the people. And the fact that you're all doing something crazy good. I mean, it's just got to be a celebration.
And that's what I tell all of our fighters. The hard work's done. You made it through training. Some people don't make it that far. Fight night is party time. Show your friends, show your family how hard you've worked. Show them why maybe you passed on dessert or didn't go out one night for happy hour and went to bed early because you had to get up to get your road work, and show them what you've been up to. In the 4 months, I mean, I trained for 4 months for a fight when I knew how to box. Some of these people have never thrown a punch before, never put on a pair of gloves, and they are in it. And they're living the life of a boxer for 4 months, and they're stepping in the ring in front of 2,000 people. And every single person in the venue knows how special it is and what they're doing. And win or lose, everybody is a champion, and everybody comes together. And it's a really, really special night.
Yeah, it's wild. I'm biased, but every event is so special. And I think that, like, not that they get better or worse, but they just get to be more and more special. And I think that, like Nicolette and Greg said, it's not an easy thing for us to not necessarily choose you, but for you to get in. And so I think that, you know, people take it really, really seriously. And you can, you know, Greg can kind of opine on that now with a month out. Like, people are taking it really seriously. And at, you know, the media day that we had, blood was drawn in the sparring matches, and I think that, you know, come fight night, it'll be no joke, those fights.
So what does the future hold for Haymakers for Hope? 5 years from now, where are you?
I hope that we are in as many cities as we think that we can handle. Right now, we're currently building the team. So we're building our kind of like quote-unquote headquarter team so that we can support a sustained growth. Because I think that the secret sauce to what we do is just how much we care, right? And how much we care about each person. And unfortunately, as you know, like entrepreneurs don't scale personally. And so, you know, finding a way to make it so that the very personal experience that we're giving people can scale takes a little bit more time. And so we take a very slow growth model. So we are hoping to grow at least one event a year. You know, if it is faster than that, then we'll kind of reassess. But, you know, I hope that in 5 years, we're in 5 to 6 new cities and we're raising close to $10 million a year, not just $10 million overall. And then, you know, we're working on other things too. So we're hoping that we can have our own programming. We're hoping to figure out sustainable ways that, you know, if you have 50 to 75 to 100 supporters, how can they then become fundraisers for the fight? Not necessarily if they, you know, because not necessarily everybody wants to fight. And so how can the people that want to fundraise for us but don't want to fight, how do they do that? And how can we, you know, empower them to do that as well? And then also, how can we, you know, just continue to do as much good as we possibly can and also have fun with it, you know, because I think team culture is a big thing to us and we want to make sure that we are having fun, but we're also, you know, doing the work that we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and exposing as many people as we can to a sport that's given me a lot and allowed me to find kind of my purpose, and providing the experience, you know, once in a lifetime sort of transformative experience to as many people as we possibly can so that they can realize what they're truly capable of and to do good and to give back and just really believe in that kind of power of one, and you knowing that you can make a difference and you yourself can change and inspire other people and just do better.
Yeah. And I would say the last thing is to continue to foster the community of what we call ass-kicking do-gooders.
That's great. Well, I gotta say, I think this is just a brilliant idea. I hope everybody who listens to this takes some time and goes to your website, just checks out your website, because I thought it was fascinating just looking at the bios of the people who are fighting and the background of the organization and your stories and what Haymakers for Hope is about.
They can definitely check out the bios of the different fighters, and whether it's Greg or someone else, they can go and donate, or they can donate to the organization. The website is Haymakers for Hope. So it's Haymakers, HaymakersForHope.org. And then it's Haymakers, the number 4 Hope at Instagram, if you want to follow. One fun thing that we do is we have the fighters do takeovers. And so they'll do a takeover and they'll show kind of a day in the life of their training. So training like at work, at night. And I think it's a really kind of a fun way for people who, you know, maybe had not have fought, but maybe they're, you know, living through brand or something like that, to really engage with the brand in a different way outside of just the actual fights or the different fight night pictures.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten about being in the ring?
This is Julie. I can take that one. My father told me when I first started boxing, and the first year I made the finals in the New York City Golden Gloves and I got to fight at Madison Square Garden, he told me, always fight to win, never fight to not lose.
That's great.
I heard a quote once that I've never forgot that someone told me. I think it was Oscar De La Hoya said that if you're not nervous going into the ring, then you probably shouldn't be getting into the ring in the first place.
Greg, Nicolette?
For me, yeah, I mean, there are so many boxing quotes that I've probably used just in my so far 3 months of training that I've just become a walking dictionary of them to my wife's disdain. But I will actually go with one that I use more often in my training, at least. So I haven't been in the ring, obviously, for my first fight yet. So, and it's from a gentleman named Hal Moore. And there's always one more thing you can do to increase your odds of success. So, and I think that doesn't just apply to training. It applies to the fight against cancer and a lot of things in life. There's always one more thing you can do. Always keep your head up. Always push forward. That's the one I would go with.
And I guess for me, it would be, regardless of the outcome, make sure you leave with no regrets.
You all are terrific. Congratulations on what you're doing. These are really crazy good turns, and I appreciate the time you spent talking today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Frank.